The VGRT Gaming Podcast, Episode 521, recorded on November 27th, 2018.
First edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 354th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So we recorded last week's episode on Thursday, but then we had no power here. And by the time it got back on Sunday, I said, no, I'm not going to edit this stupid podcast. I'll just record a new one. I mean, it was not a bad podcast. We laughed, we cried. We had tears.
So you're not going to post that one?
Well, it'll be... I might edit it and post it when we need a break and just have it as a lost episode.
Christmas is coming.
Black Friday is come and gone. And Cyber Monday is come and gone. But that's all bullshit because the sales still remain. It's not like they're going to vanish.
I made a purchase, a big one.
Oh, yeah?
A vacuum.
Oh.
A good one.
That's good. Was it Dyson? I saw those were on sale.
No, I got a Shark. It was a $300 vacuum for like $150.
Well, see? Wow. Is it the kind that you can use on flat surfaces, not just rugs?
Yeah, it's got hardwood and carpet.
Yeah, I prefer because... So big news. I'm moving back to New York on December 27th. So, yeah, I'll be back on Eastern Standard. I might just keep recording at 9 because at least then I'll have all the stuff out of the way during the day. I'll have more time for myself. So last week we did discuss Civilization VI, The Gathering Storm. And as we all knew was happening, they started their weekly show of new Civs. So basically, recapping Civ VI, it's going to add weather. It's going to add the World Council. It's going to add a host of new of gameplay mechanics. It's going to ditch, thank God, it's going to ditch for grievances. Oh, damn, I forgot the name of it. Warmongering penalty and use grievances.
Yes.
They're also going to tweak the spy system. I don't know how, but. It's not going to be – the spy system is fine as it is, but they're going to make it a little more interesting. And they're also going to increase the way diplomacy works. So we'll see if they finally get it right after, three entire games.
Here's to hoping.
Yeah. So the first Civ that they showed off were the Hungarians, and they have some interesting – you know. And, of course, since it's the expansion, they're showing off some of the new abilities that are related to weather. For example, Hungarians can take advantage of volcanic hotspots for their baths. And if the bath is near a hotspot, it actually gets a bonus. They also get bonuses with levies. They get to upgrade levied troops for free instantaneously, which is kind of neat.
That is very powerful, I think. And they get advantages with city-states getting units out of them. Yeah. So that's good.
They use their friendship to wage war.
Yeah, that's right. You get bonuses for alliances.
Yep.
So you maintain
the
alliances.
Yeah, the whatever the new units get a bonus for every ally that you have.
The Hussar,
yeah.
Yeah, it's an industrial cavalry unit, that means they probably have rifles. And and then there's another unit to get the Black Army, which is specific to...
Yeah, when you build armies, you get a bonus for that, too.
Mm-hmm, which is specific to the leader. I forgot his name now.
Yeah, he's a blonde guy who likes to tax people. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
I think from the 15th century.
Yeah, it's cool armor. it looks like a cool Civ, and I know we're getting some more ancient ones, like Mayans, so that'll be cool, too.
I'm curious to see what Eleanor of Aquitaine's going to do, because she's going to be the other British leader.
Right. I haven't had a second British leader in a while.
Yeah, I mean, they have two leaders for Greece. basically to show the difference between Athens and Sparta. And it's going to be interesting to see what they do with Eleanor of Aquitaine and how she differs from the current one, Queen Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because they have a Mary Queen of Scots movie coming out. And it's funny, you know, for a long while they had a lot of Mary Queen of Scots movies, then they went to Elizabeth movies, now they're having a new Mary Queen of Scots movie.
Did TJ want to say something? I thought I heard.
What's up?
I thought I heard you trying to. I guess you don't.
No, okay. I hadn't said anything yet.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of stuff coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't have too much to add. The levy troops thing sounds almost overpowered.
Well, you do have to buy those troops first, but...
Sure. Yeah. But, like, being able to upgrade for free, that's just, like, buy early, save later.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they don't last around forever. I think they last, what, 12 turns? I'm not sure.
Hmm.
But we'll talk about something that TJ probably has an opinion about. They finally leaked what the new Alien Isolation sequel is going to be. It's going to be called Alien Blackout.
I'm okay with this. I like Alien Isolation. It's a really good game. Like, it's probably – the cutscenes are choppy as holy hell, but, like, the experience itself being – I mean, it captures really what an Alien game really ought to be. You shouldn't
System
probably
– Got it.
You shouldn't probably be an overpowered person. There should probably be a monster that should just overpower you in every single way. That's the alien experience that I feel like a lot of people were looking for, and I feel like that's what Alien Isolation does the best.
Yeah. We also have another I lost my place here. Oh yeah. We also have the Council releasing its final episode, and that's a game I've looked at. I've heard it has terrible voice acting, but it is a true RPG adventure, in which it's an adventure game, but it uses strong RPG elements, you know, even more so than Call of Cthulhu, which we're going to discuss a little bit later. And I'm really interested in seeing what that's like, you know, because I'm always up for a good RPG, and this one is a story-based one. So, I don't think it's a puzzle one. I think it's a Telltale-style story-based one, but at least it has the RPG elements. So the combat in it is basically RPG combat, you know, but dialogue combat, which is always fun. I mean, I enjoyed it in Deus Ex Human Revolution.
I like it in Phoenix, right?
Yeah, but...
It's so dramatic.
Objection!
Let me ask you a question. Did you ever play the Marvel vs. Capcom in which you could play as Phoenix Wright?
Uh-huh, but he wasn't a very good character in there. Like, as much as it was awesome to have that as sort of a gimmick character.
What about Frank West?
Frank West was a little better.
Okay.
I mean, he gets a shopping cart with blades all over it, so, like, what are you going to do with that?
Anyways, we're going to move on to what have we been playing, and I will start first. I did play Fallout 76 briefly. As I said in the missing episode, it was boring. I just got today, and I started playing today Call of Cthulhu. And even though Vampyr sucked, the two games that we checked out 2 years ago at, 18 months ago at E3 2017... the ones we came being hopeful for were Vampyr and Call of Cthulhu. And I liked Call of Cthulhu a little bit more than Vampyr. Vampyr sucked, but Call of Cthulhu is not bad. It's more of an adventure game. There's almost no action in it. I mean, all the action in it is basically doing like Alien Isolation, except less. You just have to run and hide from people.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm taking the tack of doing as much research as possible, and if you remember what the developer said, you know, you can do that. You can do all the research, but here's the problem. If you do the research, you're going to go nuts. Mm-hmm. The more you know in the Call of Cthulhu pen and paper role-playing game, the worse off you are. And I've gone past stable, and I'm now shaken.
Mm.
And I had my encounter with the Shambler, which is basically doing the alien. I mean, you even have to hide in closets, too. Although, if you do it too late, he will see you. and he will just rip open the doors and say hi and eat your face. So
yay.
So I'm enjoying that. The only problem I have is that it's a bit of a pixel hunt, like most point and click. It's not a point and click adventure though. It's a 3D game, which makes it a little bit more infuriating because you can't just wave your mouse over the thing. You have to look at stuff. I maxed out my detective skills, and I almost maxed out both my observance and my ability to read psychology, which allows you to read motives. I am not putting any into charisma or into strength.
That's cool. I like that. Like, you know, Vampyr had some good stuff going with it for it as far as, like, citizen interaction. The combat left a lot to be desired, but the actual interactions with people were kind of the coolest part of that game. So it's cool to see that that Call of Cthulhu nailed that down even further.
Yeah, I mean, there are some options which I can't do that are grayed out. It says, oh, you need occult and charisma. Oh, damn.
Yeah, that.
By the way, you can learn medicine and occult, but you can't spend any points. You actually have to find books to do that. And oh, by the way, two times I elected to read the evil book to gain a cult, even though it was going to make me a little bit more paranoid and nuts. And the game also promises it'll fuck with you. And one character who I saw die in front of me is not dead, and he doesn't remember what happened, which makes you go, uh-oh. Did he really die? Was that a vision? Or is this person in front of me not really who he says he is? So yeah, there's a little bit of mindfuck going on there.
Mm-hmm.
Have you tried Call of Cthulhu yet?
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm trying to finish Horizon Zero Dawn.
So speaking of which, let's talk about Horizon. Let's talk about Robot Dinosaur Game.
So yeah, I've basically gotten to the point where I went, you know, you guys have heard me chat about, like, ramble about this over and over and over and over and over again on this podcast, but, like, video game collectibles and chores piss me off. But I'm not having that bad of a time finding all the little video game, all the little collectible things in Horizon Zero Dawn. I think it's because the environment is so diverse and the threats are so varied that it feels engaging to get to the places where the collectibles are every time. Also, I don't know if this was in the original game, but there was like a vendor that just gave me a map for all, where all the collectibles are, so I don't have to like track them down or anything like
you
that. I just know
that game makes no sense though, don't you?
I don't care. It's still fun.
I played it. It was, here's the thing.
How far did you get?
All the way through. Red Dead Redemption 2. Oh, and by the way, I could have been playing the online beta now because I'm an Ultimate Edition, and I completely forgot about it.
Uh-huh.
Which means, you know, I could have had a head start on everybody because I spent the $100, but oh well. That's not to say, I think I still had a better time playing Call of Cthulhu, though. Anyway, getting back to, I still think Red Dead Redemption 2 made me want to complete, makes me want to complete the, you know, the collectible stuff a lot more than most games. And Horizon Zero Dawn is too much of an Ubisoft-type game to really hold my attention.
I disagree. I didn't have the same problems with it that I had with Assassin's Creed or like, what's
another
one?
Far Cry. You won't mind doing it because, you know, I enjoyed myself in Mass Effect 2 even though it had that unbelievably stupid planet scanning thing. We had to scan for resources, which they patched in later editions so that it didn't take you as long.
Yeah.
I mean, but the thing is, people were doing that and they were enjoying it because they were enjoying Mass Effect 2 altogether.
You know what? You know what really kind of, well, part of, like, I can't say that I'm having the greatest fun with the collectibles because a big part of why I'm doing that and collecting all the things is that I just want to have the main story left to do because the main story is really good, to, in my opinion. It had a Fallout New Vegas moment. Like, Horizon Zero Dawn has a moment where you get to this major city known as Meridian, and it's where, and it's like a everything else in Horizon Zero Dawn is very rough, very wild, very feral. like, even the camps and settlements that you see before Meridian feel scrappy and open air and sort of unsafe. Then you get to Meridian and it's like this civilized Mecca. And I don't mean to say like,
here's the thing. I understand your thing, but in New Vegas, I never felt like New Vegas was all that civilized or clean or anything like that. It still seemed grungy, you know?
And more along the lines of when you get to the strip of New Vegas, it feels so different from everything else that you've been to.
You know, how about this? How about when you're in Fallout 4 and you visit the Institute? That feels different.
Yeah. I would also say that area in Fallout 3 where the cultists live and it's all verdant and green but New Vegas and Meridian feel vast and put together in a way that like nothing else in the rest of the games that they come from do. And it's so sort of exhilarating when you get to them and you have like sort of this moment of everything feels different here than everything else I've been through for the last 24 hours.
I hated having to blow up the Institute, but what are you going to do? At least they got all the scientists out. I wasn't the monster.
So that's cool. Like, have you guys ever had like another experience like that? Joni, you mentioned the Institute, but like Scott, have you ever had that moment where like you've been playing through a game for an extremely long amount of time, and then suddenly you get to a part in the game where something changes, or you're in a place that just feels ridiculously different than everything else you've been through?
Yeah, I definitely think both Final Fantasy VI and Dragon's Quest IX had that moment. Because it was very dramatic, these moments.
What was the Final Fantasy VI moment? Was it when the... Oh, I'll let you say.
When you went from the World of Balance to the World of Ruin.
And oh, yeah.
Kefka basically won the game.
Uh-huh.
And so basically you had to then recruit all your different... You had to re-recruit your... You had to go find your companions again and go fight Kefka. And you could do it with just the first three people, you know, Celeste, Sabin, and Setzer. You go right to Kefka at that point if you wanted. And that was a very crazy thing, I think. Or at least it made it different to me because, like, you didn't really expect the world to be destroyed. And then it gets destroyed. And it just is like you're just trying to recover what little is left of humanity and take down this now godlike being. So it was very crazy.
You know, speaking of Zen, we should mention that Black Mesa Zen is coming out and they released a trailer for it.
Is that a Half-Life thing?
Yeah, it's remake of Half-Life.
Ah.
It's completely remade in the Source Engine. It looks gorgeous. It actually changes some of the plot very subtly. But yeah, I mean, you have Black Mesa Zen, which is doing the Zen levels from original Fallout.
That's pretty cool. Like, I would play an updated version of... I would play a remade version of Half-Life. It's been long enough that if somebody recreated that game...
You did.
It would be refreshing.
It's $20 on Steam. It's not Hunt Down the Freeman, at least.
Huh.
And one day, if it ever is, like, free, I will play Hunt Down the Freeman just to see how bad it is. And I know one of the voice actors, Alex from I Hate Everything... actually did a voice in it, and he talked about how awful it was and how, you know, how loose the development of that game was and how, you know, like, sort of, it's the basic we don't give a shit game. Anyways, you're still playing Minecraft, right, Scott?
Yep.
You're not playing anything else?
I did get a game on Cyber Monday, the Wise Memories of Celketa. And I'm going to be playing that, so I'll have something to talk about next episode. But I just started it, and Adol has amnesia, and apparently he just went through the forests of Celketa, and he's trying to remember what the hell just happened. So I'm going to play that some more and, you know, see what this game's like.
Right. What is it called?
Memories of Selketa, I think, or it's what? Yeah.
Oh, okay. It's another Ys game.
Yeah. Yes, I think it's part. I'm not sure which. I think it's supposed to be part three. I'm not sure because I think Oath of Fel'Genna is part three, but oh, okay, yeah.
Maybe it's part four.
It's part four. That's what it is.
I think you told us that you played three already.
Yeah, that's Oath of Fel'Genna. That's three. Yeah, I think that's correct now. I think they don't have a number on there to say which one it is. So it's kind of interesting because it starts out saying that all the adventures of Adol. It's hard to there's speculation on what order some of these events happened, and so they're saying that people argue that oh, this thing happened before that, or you know, trying to chronicle Adol's adventures. So that's kind of interesting take.
Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. And speaking of laziness, first news item: PlayStation Classic using PAL versions of several games, regardless of PlayStation Classic using PAL versions for several games, regardless of region. And this comes from Polygon. In a somewhat odd choice, Sony has revealed that the PlayStation Classic's library will be partly based on the PAL versions of these games. Essentially, this means that several games on the PlayStation Classic will run slower than they did on the American releases. PAL, or phase-altering line, is the television standard used throughout most of Europe. For proper conversion, older video games would run at 50 Hz, necessitating that games that run at 30 frames per second in America run at 25% frames per second in Europe. Just so you know, North America uses NTSC. Sony confirmed the news in a blog post for the PlayStation Classic today, today being November 27th. While it was assumed that the European PlayStation Classics would retain their PAL versions, for some reason, the North American version is following suit. The games based on the PAL releases are Battle Arena Toshinden, Cool Borders 2, Destructive Derby, Grand Theft Auto, Jumping Flash, Oddworld Abe's Odyssey, Resident Evil Director's Cut, Tekken 3, and Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six. In the case of games like, say, Tekken 3, this effectively changes the way the game is played for people who remember the North American versions. It really is an odd choice for Sony, which presumably comes down to ease of manufacturing or running the games. In a blog post, Sony also quashes the rumor that the PlayStation Classic will ever be upgradable with more games. According to the company, the PS Classic is preloaded with 20 of the best games from the original PlayStation. Hold your tongues. It is not possible to purchase additional games for the PlayStation Classic. The PlayStation Classic releases on December 3rd. So
they've done this before with the Final Fantasy series. When they put that on the PlayStation, it was a slower version of the game, and I never understood why. And I guess this is why it was a PAL version. It must have been.
Well, before we get into how lazy they are, let's talk about the selection of games they have. We discussed this in a previous podcast. I mean, it's astonishing that they wouldn't have something like Resident Evil 2, Spyro, all these games that they could have had. Tomb Raider 1 and 2.
So you can't have DualShock games on there because they went with the original controllers. And I understand why not Spyro, because they just released the remade edition, and then Resident Evil 2 remake is going to be coming out in January. But I do not understand why Battle Arena Toshinden. That game aged like Battle Arena Toshinden aged like milk. Against the game that's in the collection with it, Tekken 3 is like a billion times better and plays so much smoother than the garbage, slow, plodding, people jumping 50 feet in the air mess that is Battle Arena Toshinden.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. The reviews have been coming out today for the PlayStation Classic from people who have actually used it, and it is getting savaged.
Also, why would you put games on there that, like, were so awkward to play without analog, like Rainbow Six or Siphon Filter. Like, why would you not go with games, more games like Abe's Odyssey or Alundra or Strider 2, which I've mentioned before, or other games that are just, like, not garbage to play without analog sticks?
Yeah, Suikoden would have played just fine, and I think Symphony of Night would have played just fine. Well, but again, there's a lot of games.
Even worse is, you know, stuff like Twisted Metal and Ridge Racer Type 4, in which you have to tap on the D-pad instead of using an analog stick. And the graphics are awful. It doesn't come with any manuals. And if you use a QR code link to try and get to an online manual, it returns a 404 error on PlayStation's U.S. PlayStation website. I guess it's because it's not released yet, but still, you know. But you don't even have a museum style behind the scenes feature. You have nothing. You don't even have a picture for your menu screen.
Wow. It's like they didn't even really try. I mean, you know, that's what these classic versions should really be, is trying to celebrate these games instead of just making a cash grab. You know, you just dump a bunch of games on a piece of plastic and call it done, and it's just not worth buying. It's not worth getting if you're not at least trying to make it more incentive to get than these games that, you know, honestly, people could just get an emulator and play it.
If you wanted to see any evidence this was a lazy cash grab, you can't use any USB controllers except for the ones that are with the system. Which means if they ever release a DualShock or whatever, you know, a better gamepad, you're going to have to pay extra for it.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Nintendo's Classic Edition, there's only one suspend point, save game per game.
It's just some bullshit, because, I mean, you've seen flash drives, how we're getting so much data space in such a small space, and you're telling me you can't put a little tiny gigabyte hard drive in there? I mean, we used to have cards that were like, what, 8 megabytes? Mm-hmm. Is that how much they were, I think? Or maybe even less? And you're telling me you can't put a tiny little chip in there for save games? It just baffles me.
You know, and the other thing is that the ports are extremely lazy. I have a feeling that they were just, you know, old ports, because if you play it on an HD TV, you're going to see jaggies and color gradients and all that stuff galore. They look ugly. They may run on HD, but they're not HD.
Right, and like, 5 frames of difference might not matter in a lot of games, but it will matter in Tekken 3. Like, that throws off input just enough to piss a lot of people off. And, like, I don't know. It feels like... Actually, I had this thought earlier today. Somebody should have told Sony how fucking hard it is to emulate PS1 games. There is a process to that, not that I would know. Somebody, a friend of mine knows. Somebody else, not me. somebody who was bored a lot during high school. Anyways, it was, it's just silly. Like, if you're going to go all out on this, you might as well, if you're going to go in on this and put such low effort into it, you might as well just make a plug and play system with a couple games on it, like Atari's been doing for years.
You know, I think they're just doing this because Nintendo did it, and say, oh, we better do our own PlayStation version. I don't think they really cared.
I mean,
it's like, do you remember when they released the PlayStation All-Stars because they wanted their own version of Super Smash Brothers? What a half-assed piece of crap that was? You know, you can do a PlayStation All-Stars game, but you have to put effort in it. You can't just do it because someone else has it. Say, oh, they have Super Smash Brothers. Well, we might as well do our own version.
Yeah. I mean, how long can this trend run where they keep doing this with systems, and like how much lazier is it going to get? I really doubt that. I know that Sega likes money, and I know that a lot of people have fondness for the Dreamcast, so maybe they'll do a mini Dreamcast.
Definitely do it. But here's the thing: if they do a mini Dreamcast, you know they're going to put the good games on there. Or actually, forget doing a mini Dreamcast; just do a mini Sega. You know, and just have Genesis and...
I thought there was a mini Genesis.
Yeah, and Saturn and Dreamcast. Well, they didn't have Dreamcast games. They had the Sega thing, which had the Sega and they had the Genesis and the Saturn games on it, but they didn't have the Dreamcast games on it. You know, and you know they're going to have some really good games. I mean, I don't know anybody else who doesn't want to play NFL 2K again. So, I don't know. It's just, like I said, it's lazy. They just didn't care. You know, they're just releasing it because they want to say, oh, look, we have it too. We have our own, you know. Nintendo do it, we should do it too. But then, you know, look, there are people who want to play the classic PS1 games, you know, and maybe they're doing it so that they could sell it at $100. But I think a lot of people would pay $10 more if it meant they could play, you know, Resident Evil 2 on it, you know, the original PS1 version of that, or Tomb Raider, or, you know, or other classic PS1 games, actual classics. Because I'm going to tell you something, I don't know anybody who says, geez, I wish I could play Cool Borders 2 again.
There actually is a few times I think to myself, what happened to the snowboarding games like SSX and Cool Borders and all that stuff? And the answer
SSX
is,
and SSX 3 are backwards compatible on the Xbox One.
Sure.
Oh wait, what was the guy's name? Ryan White? No.
Sean White.
Sean White.
Sean White is what happened to those games. The one that he made was bad. but there are certain like games on there that I wouldn't mind playing again. Cool Borders is actually one of them, surprisingly enough. There's just so many bad decisions made with that, though, and it's like, why even bother?
You know, if this is the reason why Super Puzzle Fighter is not on backwards compatible, because they don't want to have, you know, they want to keep that exclusive to their PlayStation Classic, I want to pimp slap Capcom all over the friggin' place. I want to have my Super Puzzle Fighter back, damn it. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Bethesda apologizes about Fallout 76 launch. This is from PC Gamer. Bethesda Softworks has posted their first in a planned series of Inside the Vault updates on the status of Fallout 76, which includes an acknowledgement of the game's many problems and promises of fixes to come. It also lays out the basics of two patches slated for December that will, among other things, increase the size of the stash, add a push-to-talk function and a field-of-view setting for the PC version of the game, and incorporate a new bulldozer feature that will simplify the process of removing rocks, trees, and other detritus from the placing of your camp. We want you to know that we've committed to rolling out the fixes and features on a regular basis and implementing changes based on your feedback. We also continue to work on an incredible list of updates for the game, including new quests and events, new vaults opening, a faction-based PvP system, and much more. Bethesda wrote, "We're confident with your support we can make Fallout 76 an incredible experience for years to come."
Okay, blah, 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 blah. I don't care about the rest of the stuff. Okay, let's just talk about this right now. Why wasn't this worked on when you were developing it? Did you all of a sudden say, oh, wait a minute, we should have PvP, huh? Or faction-based PvP and stuff like that. What were they expecting then when they released Fallout 76 on this? You know, it sort of reminds me of when Sony released the PlayStation 3 and said, well, people will buy the PlayStation 3 even if it didn't have any games because it has a Blu-ray player in it. It's just... I think the theme of this episode is going to be lazy. We already discussed last week that The Elder Scrolls 6 is going to basically use the same exact game engine that they've been using for the past 10, 12, whenever it was that Oblivion came out. You know, the same exact engine that you see in Fallout 76 is going to be in The Elder Scrolls 6. TJ? Hello?
Oh.
Sorry, I had myself muted.
Okay.
it's kind of funny that we were actually just talking about a faction-based PvP and how well it would fit in a Fallout game very recently.
I mentioned that last week. I said, you know, the reason why Dark Age of Camelot was able to run, even though it had PvE content, was that people had tribalism in that game, you know, and if you were Hibernian, you know, you want death to the Albs and Mids, you know? I mean, it created content where there was no content.
Yeah, and like I was saying, Fallout is a perfect universe for that kind of thing because you already have the built-in factions and the lore between the Enclave, Brotherhood of Steel, Crimson Caravan, the Rangers, the Caesar's Legion,
I'm just thinking, can you imagine the players who'd want to be a part of Caesar's Legion?
Oh, God.
I'm just going to crucify some people for fun. You know, they may just be the Burning Legion, you know, a faction that's in World of Warcraft, you know, the Burning Legion, no one's side, everybody hates them. That could be Caesar's Legion.
Mm-hmm.
The NCR, I think those are the Rangers.
Yeah.
But that's the California Rangers. I mean, it does take place in West Virginia.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that you've got all these built-in factions in the lore, and you've got plenty of reasons to. There's any number of reasons you could use to include any one of them. I mean, Brotherhood of Steel and Enclave are natural, but like you could come up. The Crimson Caravan basically goes where there's money, so that's another one that's easy to do. Outside of that, you just come up with reasons why the NCR would expand further east. Like, it's not that hard to do.
You know, and you could actually have people be synths, you know? I mean, working on the fact that, you know, the Institute is nearby, they could be synths. You could have synths in it, you know? Not everybody is a human. I mean, yeah, I get the reason, you know, it's like, these are people coming out of the vaults for the very first time. There's no people, you know, there's very few people, you know, in the world, because most of them are still in the vaults or just dead. You know, we get that. But the world is too empty. And even if you had, you know, okay, even if you have faction-based PvP, I mean, people still, here's the thing, you know, you could have vendors, but maybe you could own the vendors, you know, the vendors will follow whoever has the most money or something like that, you know, give people a reason to want to fight as well, you know, because just fighting, you need, you know, you have to have some bonus. I mean, when the Hibernians owned towers in the neutral lands, you know, they all got a buff, you know. It's just they're patching on something, and I remember when I was talking about Fallout, Halo 5, and their version of Horde mode. They didn't come with it. People were upset, so they appended it. They just turned big team battles into their Horde mode, but it didn't work because it was never built for that.
Mm-hmm.
Were these things that Bethesda wanted to do? We don't know. All of this is after the fact.
I mean, they had, what, 2-3 betas for this? You would think that they would have, if they were paying attention, they would have seen these things beforehand.
Well, people were complaining about this stuff, but, you know, the excuse was, well, we lowered the difficulty of all the monsters so that you could get an idea of what it was like, so you could have some progression. Now mm-hmm. we found out, no, it's just very low difficulty.
And, yeah.
You know, here's a question. Would they have suffered if they waited a year? If they just added stuff over a year? Why did they have to release it now? I mean, didn't they just announce this at E3 a couple of months ago? How long have they been working on this? Because how long they've been working on it, they haven't been working on it long enough.
Yeah, I mean, there was clearly, again, I've said this before, but like this is a AAA developer moving out an amateur product. And it's kind of, it's got to be embarrassing because, like, this is Dust, or no, this is DayZ day one issues.
Well, here's the thing. At least DayZ kind of... was Arma 3. It was based, you know, it was just a mod for a very good game. This is not a mod, although it feels like one.
It's kind of lowering my expectations for Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6. I mean, if this is how things are going, then maybe that one joke where they show like a guy that's medieval with a happy and sad face, and that's how you're going to communicate in Elder Scrolls 6.
I'm just wondering. Well, here's the thing. Maybe. I wonder how many personnel are working on Elder Scrolls 6 and Starfield, and that they had almost no one working on Fallout 76.
Yeah, I mean, it's like I mentioned it before. I feel like they're gonna make this game into something better, and probably 3 months, 4 months down the line, it'll probably be a much different game from what we're seeing now.
Look at how we're going to be discussing this later in the podcast, but look how long it took for them to get No Man's Sky to something that people would want to play.
Right.
What was that quote Paul likes to say?
Yeah, a good game is what's it called? A good game. What's it called? A bad game is bad forever.
Yeah.
A bad game, and nowadays a bad game can become a good game if you just sink more money into it.
No, it was
because no game is ever actually released nowadays. They're just in early access until they're not.
Yeah, so true.
It was Shigeru Miyamoto who did that quote. Yeah, a delayed game is eventually good, but a rushed game is forever bad.
Yes, there we go.
And, you know, they could have delayed this a year, and I don't think people would have been upset.
No. They should have released it in early access. That's what they should have done.
No. Not even
nobody was asking for this game, and nobody knew this game was coming. It was a complete surprise.
Remember when we were concerned about what griefing would be in the game?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I would have preferred griefing now. At least it would have been something. You know? And I don't think it's possible to grief people. There's no way to grieve except just to shoot them. That's mm-hmm. about it, and that's not the worst thing that can happen to you in this game. The worst thing that can happen to you in this game is sleep. And here's the thing. There are people who are really, really enjoying Fallout 76. There are people who have gotten really deep into it, and they've uncovered the secrets. You know, there are secret places and all that stuff. But here's the problem. We discussed this last week. Someone told me, well, you know, Final Fantasy 13 gets really good 30 hours in. I'm not going to play 30 hours of Final Fantasy 13 just to see if gameplay maybe improves. Just walking along linear paths
and 30 hours is a long time.
Popping footsteps.
30 hours is like 3 months of gameplay for me because I don't have that kind of time.
Yeah, there are a lot of games you can beat in 30 hours. So if you're not having fun by the time 30 hours marked, then it's not a good game.
I started Horizon Zero Dawn at the beginning of October. Like, I don't have that much time on my hands.
Same
so
here.
No. So well, no, if a game is bad for 30 hours, then no, I'm not going to take the time to get through 30 hours.
But here's the even if you do, by the way, most games are like 12 hours long to begin with. But you have to really grab people by the socks. Now, I enjoyed the opening of Fallout 76 a little bit. You know, you create your character, then you wander through where there was a party. You missed the party because you were drunk and you overslept, you know. But once you get out there, it's sort of like, okay. Here's the thing. You know what's really boring in movies? People walking around the woods. That is the most boring thing you can do in a movie, you know. Is you ever watch a horror film and all they do is walk around the woods for a bit? And I'm not even thinking of Blair Witch. I'm trying to just, you know, these cheap-ass movies. They're walking around the woods. That's what you do in Fallout 76. We walk around the woods.
Yeah.
There's a reason why. Here's the thing. There's a reason why Fallout 3, Fallout New Vegas, and Fallout 4 are all opened in the desert. Because it's infinitely more interesting than just some woods.
I don't know about that.
I think woods is much more interesting than desert.
No, it isn't. No, trust me.
Yes, yes.
Play Mad Max and get back to me on that one.
You like your desert, fine. I like my forest.
Well, here's the thing. Well, remember Fallout 3 when you first walked out of your vault? I mean, it was just a desert, nighttime. But it was beautiful. How did Fallout 76 start? You started off, well, it wasn't a desert, actually. Well, it was a cutscene. You were getting shot in the head in some graveyard. And then
Fallout New Vegas.
Good Springs. And Good Springs wasn't a desert, but it was a wasteland. And it still looked more interesting than just walking around in the woods.
I don't know. I disagree with that. I think that there's definite things that can be done with the woods. And, like, I do want to play Fallout 76 to discover all the... I am going to wait until the game is patched up and much more, like, streamlined. But
I'm going to tell you something. Like, by this time next year, Fallout 76 will be free to play.
I don't think so. I don't think that's...
It is so a free-to-play game.
I mean, ESO isn't free-to-play yet.
People paid $60 for a free-to-play game. I've played enough free-to-play games. This is a free-to-play game.
I mean, Elder Scrolls Online isn't a free-to-play game yet.
No, but that's interesting. And here's the thing with Elder Scrolls Online. It's basically playing Elder Scrolls. But the difference is that there's people you can talk to. There's actual missions. You have quest givers.
You know. But like, if they actually are adding faction PvP to Fallout 76, I think that's going to actually do a good thing for the whole thing.
Yeah, but here's the thing: you just can't tack it on.
Right, it's got to be thought out and done well.
Well, that's what they're going to do. If they're, you know, it's going to be tacked on. You know, Fallout 76 is huge. At least it has that going for it. You know, it's not a small game. Physically, it's a very large landscape, and you can do a lot with that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I would do the Dark Age of Camelot route if they possibly could. You know, just cut and paste three versions of the same area and have one giant central area, which is PvP. You know, and just make enough tweaks to it. You don't have to exactly cut and paste it, but you can make just enough so that it looks different and it has slightly different, you know, but you don't have to, you know, you don't have to remake the entire world, you know.
I think you run into – there's an issue with Fallout with a Fallout game that it would run into with that other games like that wouldn't. And that's that everybody wants to explore – most people want to explore the entire map in Fallout. And if you have certain factions keeping control of certain –
game, so guess what? You just have to gird your loins and if you want to explore.
Right, but if you have certain factions controlling certain
bits of territory...
By the way,
when they say about faction gameplay, how many people are going to have the map? Because guess what? 24 ain't going to cut it. You can't have 8 versus 8 versus 8.
Right.
In a persistent world? No.
I think you would
break out the server and start having a couple hundred people on the map at the same time.
I think eventually you have to raise the server cap for that to work.
You have to land bigger then, so, you know.
But, point being... One of the things that people have always liked, myself included, about Fallout games is exploring the entire map, and that would kind of piss me off if there were certain places I couldn't go because
of
their faction.
It's just dangerous, that's all.
Not if I get killed every time I take a step onto the land because...
Yeah, you go with some friends.
Yeah, easier said than done.
Hey,
What if Fallout God is hanging out there and he just
kills
me?
But that's what I said, World of Warcraft... If you're Alliance, did you really feel bad you couldn't wander the Torin lands without being shanked?
Yeah, but that's a different kind of game.
If you're creating an online only world, it is a different kind of game from the start.
Sort of.
Here's the thing: if you want to explore everything, well, then just create three characters, one in each faction.
Ah, oh, that sounds boring and awful.
Well, you're exploring. You're just exploring as three different people.
No. I don't want to.
On that note, why don't you take the next item, DJ?
Fortnite surpasses 200 million players from IGN. Fortnite now has more than 200 million players, making it among the most played games in the history of the medium. The new statistic, which comes from Bloomberg, represents a 60% increase in players since Epic Games shared information back in June. The following month, Epic Games was valued at up to $8 billion, and a new investment deal made back in October valued the company at nearly twice that number. Thus far, Fortnite has reportedly brought in more than $1 billion from microtransactions alone. through the Battle Royale component. Though the Battle Royale component is free to play, the Save the World mode is still a traditional paid release for the moment. There are plans to also make Save the World free in the future, but this won't happen until 2019. Fortnite is currently available with cross-play platform play on Xbox One, PS4, Nintendo Switch, PC, Mac, iOS, and Android. The game recently added the Tinder Defender skin to its Battle Royale mode, which was based on a concept drawing by an 8-year-old fan. It was announced earlier that Fortnite item gifting is now live for a limited time.
You know, there's additional news, which isn't all that important, but the cell phone versions of Fortnite are now running at 60 frames per second.
Yeah.
I still don't know how you can play on a cell phone, but, you know, people are doing it.
I imagine you play on an iPad and you just plug in a controller.
No, these are cell phones. These are cell phones.
You can do Bluetooth controllers, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, even if I know how they play it, I'm just seeing why they play on a cell phone.
And not every 8-year-old's parents are going to get them a Bluetooth controller specifically so that they can play Fortnite on their cell phone.
I just think people just really want to play Fortnite on the go. It's like, I gotta get my Fortnite. Here I am on the train.
Play on the Switch.
You know? That gifting thing is really cool, though. They made it so that you can actually gift skins to other people, which is a neat little thing for that kind of game.
Yeah, I hope they learn from Valve and make sure there's no shady deals going on with that. You know,
the black market trade of skins.
Well, not only that, but also the fraud and the hacking and all that stuff. It was just
sure.
But you know, here's the thing. I wonder if Fortnite's going to be the vector in which we're going to have true cross-platform play everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Fortnite's doing it and 200 million players and people are saying, well, you know, they made $1 billion just from their microtransactions. We got to get in on this, because here's the thing. When you're cross-platform playing, you're a little more invested, especially if you have one or more platforms. I mean, you're in your Xbox One, your friend wants to play something on Xbox. Okay, fine. I'll just switch over to my PC and continue from there. Or, you know, someone's playing with their Switch version and they play the PS4 version when they get home.
Yeah. This game is by and far the most ridiculously popular thing I've ever seen. And I don't understand how it's crazy to think that it still has such a player base that it does. Like, I think we all assumed after a good portion of the year, this would die off, but it's still going strong, and it's kind of amazing.
It's PUBG, but it doesn't suck, and it doesn't look like shit.
Moreover,
harsh, but it's true.
Moreover, like, you've had other things like Call of Duty Blackout Battle Royale mode came out, and there's been other things like Realm Royale that came out, and then the Cyanide and Happiness Battle Royale that came out. And, like, this market is becoming saturated, but Fortnite still manages to keep it going.
Yeah, but are you playing Bobo?
I am not playing Bobo.
How about Bozo?
Bozo?
Zombie Ops.
Oh.
Black Ops Zombie Ops.
Nah.
They have three modes. They have Bobo, they have Bozo, and I forgot what the other one is. Bomo. That's right. I think it's Bomo. Mission Ops, Blackout, and Zombie Ops. And, you know, if they ever release the Zombie Ops as a standalone, which they'll never do, I probably will try it out. Because, gosh darn it, you know, Left 4 Dead 3 ain't coming out anytime soon, and I need my fix.
What is it you're waiting for?
Left 4 Dead 3.
Oh, yeah.
And Vermintide 2 isn't filling that fix either. Vermintide 2, you know, it's just a little off, you know, just a little off that doesn't feel quite right. I guess it's because there's so much melee in it, and the charm of Left 4 Dead is that it's mostly melee, it's mostly shooting. You only need melee for when you're trapped in a corner and you have to beat those zombies back.
Yeah.
There's nothing more satisfying than a well-timed dynamite stick. So, yeah, I mean, you were an early adopter. You were really an early adopter way back when, TJ. I think it was like 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago.
I thought it was a decent – this was back when it was just Save the World.
Yeah.
I thought it was okay. I did it for review, and I thought it was an okay game. I never could have imagined that it was going to catch on like wildfire like it has now.
I wonder if PUBG bitching about and their what was the name of that? I think it was the Korean company, Blue Hole, I think it was called, threatening to sue Epic for using Battle Royale. You know, I think that might have galvanized people and made them move towards Fortnite. And you can't underestimate the fact that the characters in Fortnite look unique and they look fun to play and they have fun weapons. I mean, for all PUBG really is, it's just 50 versus 50, a deathmatch with standard, lock standard characters, you know. I mean, at least Epic, you know, they have a history with weird weapons. Think of the bio gun from Unreal Tournament.
Yeah, the Fortnite does look more playful with its characters, and the PUBG just has this kind of Battlefield, Call of Duty, all those kind of game characters in there, so it just doesn't feel as fun,
you know,
or interesting.
Well, here's the thing. You know why Team Fortress 2 beat off all comers? Character design. I mean, you watch Team Fortress 2, it looks fun because the characters are fun. I mean, you see the Heavy, and it makes you want to giggle. You know? I mean, the Heavy was in the poker game, Telltale Poker. You were about to say something, TJ. You inhaled.
I did. I was thinking.
Okay. So we'll move on to the last news item. No Man's Sky Visions update improves diversity, adds weird stuff. And this comes to us from Game Watcher. No Man's Sky is a bit of a divisive game, which is perfectly fair, but it's hard not to be impressed by the amount of work that the developers, Hello Games, are putting into it at no additional charge. Visions is the next major update for the infamous Galaxy Exploration title, and just like the previous few content updates, it's got some really exciting stuff going for it. This includes odd, almost Lovecraftian flora and fauna. The Visions update doesn't add many new features to the game per se, but instead focuses on providing more depth to the stuff that's already in it. For example, players can expect a significantly more diverse universe to enjoy in their travels, with more sky, fluid, flora, fauna variations than ever before. Players who visit the new anomalous planets will have to come prepared, because evolved there are highly aggressive and dangerous life forms you just might give chase. However, in your channels, you might be rewarded with odd, otherworldly trophies to add to your base. Visions introduces archaeology to No Man's Sky, enticing players to scour the galaxy for ancient bones of alien life forms, with complete intact skeletons a particularly valuable reward. Be careful of the corrupted sentinels, however. No Man's Sky's Visions update will also add new collaborative community research missions, in which explorers worldwide join in and share progress to work on a common goal. If you want to go it alone, though, Crash Freighters might be something to pursue. So let's look at this, and let's look at Fallout 76 now. Ever since Hello Games managed to get themselves away from Sony, you know, when it became multi-platform, they've gone nose to the grindstone just to add content, and a lot of it free content. I mean, the next update, which was the major one, that was when the Xbox One version was released, that was available for everything, that was free for people who owned No Man's Sky already, and Visions is free. So they get it. You know, I mean, I'm not going to say a lot of the controversy wasn't their fault, because when Sony says something, you don't have to nod your head and say, yeah, it's true. You can just say, well, it's something we might add later. You know,
I think it's definitely a thing where they were worried about like going against the wishes of the person, the group that was paying them tons of money. But you're right. I think that since they've gotten away from like the hype machine that like put them in the situation they were at launch,
well,
I feel
you
like
put yourself in that situation when you have three straight E3 presentations, core presentations too.
Sure.
This wasn't like Microsoft saying, oh, by the way, here's this game. No, this is Sony saying, this is one of our featured games for the PlayStation. Look how awesome it is, and look what you can do in it.
Yeah.
You know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of the Capcom 5.
It's kind of a tough situation to be in as an indie developer. I imagine we're like, what do you do? Do you say, hold on, Sony, no?
Well, you know, you remember the Killzone developers in 2006 when Sony showed this pre-rendered, what's it called, video of Killzone, and they said, well, this is going to be actual gameplay. And the Killzone developers who were sitting in the stands were mortified. There was no way in hell they were able to do photorealistic movie quality graphics.
Much as like I like to eat and shower and pay my bills, I just can't imagine Sean Murray being like going on stage and just be like, "Hold on there, Mr. Sony, you take your $100,000 and get out."
Well, you could say in the interviews that it's a feature, but they could lie. They could say, "Well, it's going to be a feature, but we're focusing on the single player game first, so we'll add it later, at post launch." I mean, hey, look, Rockstar heavily promoted Red Dead Online, but it's not until now, like a month later, before they say, okay, we're going to break it out.
Yeah, and I would agree that like they probably didn't do themselves favors by just going along with it. I just think that it's also a really tough situation to be in as an indie, and I think that being out of that situation is a lot. Like, I have heard people say that No Man's Sky now is a completely different game from what it was at the start. Like,
are you kidding me? It's a completely different game than what was on the disc. If you remember, when you bought No Man's Sky, you had to install the entire thing from online because the game that was on the disc was an old version of the game that they decided not to use.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that, and it was super annoying.
Yeah. You know what? I can't wait for the Gamma Sutra article 5 to 10 years from now when they talk about this, about the making of this game. It's going to be a long article with a lot of revelatory stuff.
I just can't think of any. I'm trying to think of any other situation like No Man's Sky where the game was overhyped well beyond the. Well, you mentioned Killzone as well.
I can also like, give you Halo 2. Halo 2 was overhyped beyond belief, and they had to cut the game in half, and they had to revamp everything. And that's why you had the infamous finish this fight ending of Halo 2, because they couldn't fit it all in one game, and the game that they released, you know, they just couldn't do on an Xbox 360, Xbox original.
Yeah, I was just trying to think of a game that, like, flopped so hard out of the gate as No Man's Sky did, and besides Fallout 76, I failed to think of one.
Maybe Hellgate London?
Hellgate London?
Yeah, I mean that. See, here's the thing about No Man's Sky. It didn't flop because so many people pre-ordered it, for one thing. That's the thing about pre-ordering, you know? You get burned. And anybody who wants to sue Bethesda over Fallout 76, guess what? Tough shit. Caveat emptor. That's what you get for pre-ordering a game. You know?
That's why I only pre-order games if I know they're going to be perfect and they have awesome swag.
Well, I pre-ordered Red Dead Redemption 2.
Believe you me, if I had $900 burning a hole in my wallet, I would have pre-ordered that Resident Evil 2 remake thing with the typewriter.
I would have pre-ordered this Fallout 76 thing with you know, the ultimate edition of that. At least, you know, yeah, it's a crappy game, but I got some cool stuff.
Would you have worn the helmet during the podcast every time?
Well, who could see me? See, that's the problem.
You just gotta make a robot voice so we know you're wearing it.
I could do that now. Not?
No, I believe it's illegal to make robot voices without the helmet on.
Scott?
Hmm?
Did you just throw in here?
No, I'm here.
I mean, just throw in. I mean,
opinion. I'm glad that No Man's Sky has gotten development to be a better game now, and people are enjoying it more. It just seems like a shame that it took this long to get to that point. And I guess there was warning that this was an early access kind of thing. So better late than never. I hope that, you know, yeah.
You know what? No Man's Sky was basically an indie game that was promoted as a AAA game, and it was not a AAA game.
Yeah. when there was a lot of hype. There was a huge hype machine on it. That was probably bad.
I mean, this was a $20 game when it was released. If they had released it as a $20 game, let's say they didn't have Sony at all, right? And they just went on its own and they sold it for $20 on Steam and on Xbox One and on PS4, I'm willing to bet you people would have loved it. They wouldn't have had the same expectations. They would have said, oh, this is a pretty nice, space exploration game. And if Halo might have started releasing all these updates, you know, they might have been able to get people to pay for the DLC.
Yeah.
You know, and just, like I said, or maybe it's better this way, in which, you know, they're actually motivated to make the game as good as they had promised, which will probably never happen, but at least they're trying.
Yeah. Certainly appreciate them trying and making it better, because they could just walk away from it and be like, oh, I'm done. So at least they're trying to make it a better game.
Yeah, but if they did that and say, we're going to make our new game, their new game is going to have a lot of baggage to start with.
Yes.
I mean, Sean, you know, okay, I get the predicament you're in, but you didn't have to be a prick. Because some of those tweets that you made, yeah, you don't have to be a prick. You don't, you know, he came off really bad, you know, and he's the face of the company, you know, and had he just tried to walk away, I don't know how Hello Games could have sold their next game. They would have had to make it so that it'll give you free blowjobs.
Yeah, it's well, I guess it's a weird thing to think about. Like, I'm not in that guy's shoes. Like, it's not the first time we'd seen a meltdown like that. Phil Fish was the guy behind Fez.
Basically, Jonathan Blow too. I mean, Jonathan Blow had his own little blow up.
Them and did Notch have a blow up, or did he just turn, or did he just achieve his true form?
He was always a white supremacist, and he started blowing up when people were saying Trump voters suck.
Yeah, so, like, it's hard to get inside the stress of the mind of an indie creator. Like, I have friends that do indie games, and they've told me, like, you lose a lot of sleep over this thing that you want, that you put your heart and soul into, and you want people to play, and there's no, and if you fail, it's on nobody but you. And that's got to be, like, an enormous amount of stress to deal with on top, and like getting Sony to give you a leg up, or like with Microsoft helping people like Obsidian, that's got to be an immense feeling. But you also think to yourself, what if I fail? I imagine. And like how much stress that must be to keep your place within the good graces of those monstrous companies that are handing you thousands of dollars to do your thing.
You know who gets it? You know who really gets it? Subset Games. It was a two-person studio with Justin Ma and Matthew Davis. They're best known for FTL. I mean, they release their games, and they add content, and it's like you never hear, you know, here, Into the Breach, it was kind of mediocre. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't great. And yet people really enjoyed it because, you know, the developers weren't pricks, and people like Subset Games. And also, you know, the one guy behind Stardew Valley, Jesus, who got help from Chucklefish, but still, I mean, you know, there's ways to do stuff, and you don't hear about him that often, do you?
No.
All you hear about him is that he worked a couple of years making Stardew Valley because he wanted to have his own version of Harvest Moon on PC.
There was also Dustin Elysian Tale. That was also one guy as well.
Yeah.
Pretty good game.
And he had to do all the animation for Elysian Tale, too.
Mm-hmm.
Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave us some iTunes comments. I am at Jonah Falcon.
I'm at Johnny Chugs.
I'm at Alpha Shard.
And we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.